This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, Iraq's prime minister says if he got more guns, there'd be less violence. And Congressman Barney Frank compares the Katrina tragedy to ethnic cleansing. Joining us are Joe Davidson, an editor for The Washington Post, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and Nat Irvin, professor of future studies at Wake Forest University and columnist for the Winston-Salem Journal. So let's move right ahead. Welcome, folks. And Iraq Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki wants more weapons from the U.S. He said that the Bush administration has refused to give Baghdad security forces sufficient guns and equipment. And that's why so many people have died. So the prime minister also said if they got the necessary arms, U.S. forces could, quote, dramatically cut the number of troops there within 6 months. So is this a good plan or a devil's bargain, Joe?
Well, I think it, in some ways it reflects the emphasis of many people in the United States, both Republicans and Democrats, to try to train the Iraqis to take more responsibility and more operational responsibility for security in Iraq and in Baghdad, in particular, and the training would follow the training presumably is more weapons. One thing that I found particularly interesting about his comments, however, was his criticism of Condoleezza Rice, who said that his administration, the prime minister's administration, is on borrowed time and that American patience was running out. His response was that her remarks essentially give aid and comfort to the enemy in Iraq. And that struck me as it kind of rang a bell, because so often the administration in the United States talks about the cut-and-run mentality of the Democrats, at least the alleged mentality of the Democrats, and how that aids the enemy. And so now we have the Iraqi prime minister essentially accusing the Bush administration of the same thing.
Professor Berry?
Well, I think that the killing that has gone on in Iraq and the Civil War has not been because the United States didn't give enough guns to the Iraqis. In fact, the evidence is that a lot of the material that was given to them fell into the hands of people who were engaged in the sectarian violence. But I do think, and the United States government has already said, that it will give more weapons as part of its big push, surge, or whatever we're supposed to call it, that's going on now. For me, the most interesting thing will be to see what happens after the surge. I have no doubt that American troops, when they go there, will be able to clean areas and kill some people. And I don't think the militia, Sadr's militia, will even try to stand up to them. So far, they don't give any signs of doing that. The issue is going to be what happens then. But I do think also that if the government in Iraq is supposed to be a democracy, and we supported the idea that it is, that it's not up to the Secretary of State to say that you're on borrowed time. That sounds like it's not a democracy. It sounds like it's controlled by the United States solely, which is what people in the Arab world are saying already.
Well, Nat, you know, Professor Berry mentioned Muqtada al-Sadr. One of his allies was captured recently, but it seems as if the idea of sectarian violence is kind of hydra-headed, and you can get rid of one person, but there's always going to be someone else to step in the place. The question is, you know, it's a kind of guns and butter question. Will more guns produce more safety, or are there other things that people need to produce safety, whether it's a sufficient power system, sufficient vote, sufficient education? How does the U.S. influence things in Iraq without being overstepping its bounds, and also with being respectful of this guns and butter question?
Well, I think if you ask the average American, when you hear what President Maliki said, the average American has to go say something like this. Did he just say what I thought he said? Did he just, the president of Iraq, did he just say that our troops could come home, start to arrive home by April?
So what you're saying is
June.
The average American is saying, send the guns now.
Send the guns and butter. And in fact, what it raises is a question within everybody's mind of saying, I thought this is what we were already doing. I mean, what is this business about not having enough weapons and armaments needed to protect the country? I thought this was the whole matter that we were solving for the last 3 years. It raises it just further illustrates this great divide that we have between ourselves and our American president, who seems to come up with new explanations every week for why things have either gone wrong or how now, because of a new plan, things are going to go better. I think one of the it also illustrates finally this point here. If you look further at an interview that Maliki, this interview that we're talking about today, Maliki was asked the question was posed, do you need Bush more than he needs you? And it illustrates the dilemma that the United States has found itself in. We are actually making a bet on a man, Maliki, who in December said he wasn't even sure if he wanted to be president. He wasn't even sure if this was the right job for him. In fact, he's hoping to get through with this whole thing as soon as possible.
Well,
it just illustrates.
But,
go ahead, Mary.
Guys, I don't think the decision about whether American troops can come home in April or whenever is up to Maliki. In point of fact, Bush will decide that, and will decide it based on trying to balance the Sunnis against the Shias and so on. Because if the American troops leave and Maliki's government takes over, the Shias will be in ascendancy. Then you got the Saudis and all the other Sunnis who are now gathered together who are upset and concerned about it. Until a democracy that appears to be like Mr. Bush wants it exists, I think that he will make decisions about that, or he'll keep playing off and making new initiatives here, there, and everywhere around the corner until the end of his presidency. That's what I think. I don't think Malik can decide this all about by himself. What should happen?
Oh no,
he certainly cannot.
No,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, he can't do that. No, Joe. I was just going to say I agree with that, Mary, completely. I just think it illustrates, though, further how where the American public is, that on the one hand, whom are we to believe? I mean, if the president of Iraq is saying, and Mr. Bush has said in the past, that when the Iraqis says that they want us to leave, we're ready to leave. Well, if the president says, look, you guys can go in June, I mean, are we not supposed to go in June?
There are a number of different layers here, though. The Iraqi people, in a couple of recent polls in the last few months, including one sponsored by the State Department, indicated that the Iraqi people, not necessarily the leadership of the government, the Iraqi people are ready for Americans to leave.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing is this business about giving the government of Iraq more arms is reminiscent of the debate in this country, often led by conservatives, that the United States did not provide enough of its own firepower in terms of enough troops at the beginning of the war, and Bush has recently acknowledged that. And others have complained for years, and the situation perhaps is resolved now, but that many of the troops there did not have enough armored vehicles, for example. And you heard stories of parents sending their sons a bulletproof vest because they couldn't get them from their commanders. And so this kind of thing that Maliki is talking about now is reminiscent of the debate in this country involving U.S. troops.
But you know,
before we move on,
please.
I'm going to let you go. I just have to do the what we call the midpoint promo.
Oh, go right ahead.
It's all business. All business. So in case you're tuning in, that was Professor Mary Frances Berry trying to horn in on my action. University of Pennsylvania. This is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Jadeh. We also have Joe Davidson, editor for The Washington Post, and Nat Irvin of Wake Forest University. Go ahead, Professor Barron.
I was going to say the bottom line is if we are supposed to be trying to have a democracy in Iraq, if a democracy exists and a majority controls it, the Shias are going to control it. And as long as we keep dancing around trying to figure out some way to keep that from happening or to keep the Sunni allies in Saudi Arabia and Egypt and so on and keep the oil flowing and all that, as we balance that, whenever we decide to leave, what we're doing now is tricky. We're saying to the Shias, we know you're a majority, but somehow you got to make the Sunnis and the Kurds and everybody else have a real piece of this, and you don't really have the power, and you have to, Maliki, go out and attack and undermine your Shia allies in order to pull this trick off. And all I'm saying is, good luck. And so here we are just, you know, with the troops, sending more troops and fainting around and waiting until 2008, I guess.
Well, Joe, before we wrap this topic up, you know, it strikes me that President Nixon, God rest his soul, nattering nabobs of negativism, one of the great phrases of politics of all time.
Spiro Agnew.
That's right.
Oh, sorry. You know what? Spiro was from Maryland, and I'm completely wrong. That was Spiro Agnew. Sorry about that. But during the Nixon administration, at least, I have half of it right. It strikes me now that a lot of people have opinions about Iraq. What's going to happen in Washington as people try to put opinion together with legislation? Because right now, you have this whole question of what it is that's going to happen with the U.S. and Iraq relations, and there's a fight in Congress about it. So what are you hearing, Joe, on the ground in Washington about all these folks with opinions and how they're going to battle each other to determine the U.S. approach to Iraq?
Well, I guess that battle now is best seen on Capitol Hill with the resolution sponsored by the Democrats primarily, but at least a couple of Republicans, a resolution regarding Iraq that the administration very much is opposed to. I think how this resolution comes out, the wording, for example, whether or not this troop increase is considered an escalation, that was one of the words that is part of the debate. The Democrats are considering, I believe, not using that word in order to, or at least considering not using it in order to draw more Republicans in. So the debate and the opinions takes part over such things can revolve around just a single word. And so I think we'll see these opinions. Obviously, opinions have played a big part in this debate all along, but now that the power has shifted to the Democrats, it puts it on a whole another level. And I think the debate over this resolution is a prime example of that.
All right, let's move along to another topic. I just have to apologize for Spiro Agnew and Nixon. I am from Maryland. I should have known it was Spiro Agnew. He's not one of our more famous residents or...
Yeah,
anyway.
Infamous would be right.
Exactly. We're going to move right along to Congressman Barney Frank, who sparked controversy last week. Uh-oh. Professor Barry, I hear you. His comments about the federal government's response to Hurricane Katrina. So he was addressing the housing crisis brought on by the hurricane, and he's a Democrat from Massachusetts. He said, at this point, you're not talking about incompetence. You're talking about ethical values in a calculated way. You refuse to do anything for well over a year after the disaster. The policy, I think, is ethnic cleansing by inaction. And so he is speaking about the Republicans, talking about Louisiana becoming, in his words, whiter and richer. Did he cross the line, Professor Barry, or was this speaking truth to power?
Absolutely not. Barney Frank is right on the point that should be made. People in New Orleans, where I just came back from, that's what they say. Black people and white people, that in fact what it amounts to is ethnic cleansing. And we have had stories in the last few days about the state's road home program, which is supposed to provide money to people, which had a contractor operating it. And the contractor now says that he doesn't have, any black and Asian, because there are Vietnamese there in the Gulf, people who are getting this money, and he needs to start a new outreach contract to try to reach them to see if they want any. The people I talk to, they desperately want something. And if you wander around New Orleans, it's great. We hear that Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt are going to move into the quarter as an example to try to attract some people. But if you
are they
going to
adopt another child, though? That's
they
the question.
Might. They just might. Maybe they'll adopt one in New Orleans. But in any case, the point is that if you drive around or walk around in the city, you clearly see the places where people are struggling and are living in the suburbs, driving in, trying to build their places, still in trailers, don't have trailers, and therefore they have to drive in, and the lights are not on one side of the street. And you see the other areas where, in fact, they've already gotten their money, and they're building. And the curious thing to me, and I said this on this show at the time, why Governor Blanco would have evacuated all those people out of the state who are her voters. The Democratic Party's margin of voting in Louisiana is in New Orleans. That's how Mary Landrieu won the Senate, and she's up again. That's how Governor Blanco won. It was those voters, the black voters in New Orleans, and now they've shipped them out. And Barney Frank is calling attention to the politics of it and to the immorality of it. And now, with Katrina fatigue, people are trying to move on. But Barney was right on.
Yeah, let me let other folks jump in and now.
I guess so.
Yeah, no. Now, I know you've been in New Orleans a lot. Well, but before you agree with Mary, and that's
I don't agree.
Oh, you don't agree?
No,
oh,
okay. I don't agree.
Go,
no.
Please go.
I mean,
for
I just
it.
I don't. I think that the point that Mary makes are all correct, but I just think that here's the language is very important, and you know, to say that this government is invade our American government is involved in ethnic cleansing, I think is just wrong. I mean, this not ethnic cleansing. It's more accurate to reflect the poor people cleansing, democratic cleansing, whatever. But I don't really think any of that. Actually, I think it's much more of the fact that we have to recognize that our government, this particular agency, is incompetent. Now, we have to also add this, too, that there is another part of the Katrina disaster that's being better managed in Mississippi. And so some of the blame for what's going on in New Orleans has to be put squarely at the foot of the people who are there. And I'm talking about the governor, the senator, and the mayors, and all the elected officials and all the other public officials. And, of course, the federal government has a role, and it has clearly been incompetent. But, I mean, I think it makes great headlines. Last week we talked about, you know, President Carter's book about apartheid and when we're talking about Israel. But to say ethnic cleansing is just – it makes great headlines. But I think it's
well,
wrong.
Let me jump in here about
Joe,
the language.
Joe, you got 35 seconds.
Okay, as an editor, I'm a big proponent of writing that draws attention, and ethnic cleansing, this phrase, does that. The downside of that, however, is that it draws attention to a set of particular words, and then we don't focus on the larger issue that I think is trying to be presented. For example, Barney Frank said, if you lose 100,000 black voters, you take a state that was marginally Republican, and you've made it solidly Republican. Well, now, that's a political analysis that I think Republicans and Democrats really would want to discuss. But mm-hmm. by focusing on two or three words that draw attention to the larger subject, it also has a tendency to obscure the specifics, which might very well be important. And so this wording is crucial. And frankly, and this is a situation where I'm of two minds. One, as a writer, you do want to make something provocative and draw people to the subject matter, but you don't want to make it the sole topic of discussion.
I don't care if you call it
banana.
Lady
and gentlemen,
it still is not doing what needs to be done for the poor people, many of whom are black folk in the area.
We got to let you go. Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at University of Pennsylvania, Ned Irvin, Future Studies Wake Forest, and Joe Davidson of The Washington Post. Thank you all and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Same to you guys.